Hey, good morning. It's a really warm, really warm Saturday today. I expect, like you
it
said,
is nice. Here in Rochester, New York, it's unusual for it to be this warm in the middle of November.
Wow. But it was warm. I was down Southern Tier, was 70 down there yesterday. But I guess Sunday, folks, it's going to get really nasty, right? Yeah. I'm thinking. It's Christmas is coming. Well, everything's coming, right? Hanukkah, Christmas.
But you know, I'm like, a Grinch. I'm a Christmas Grinch.
Why?
No, it's, you know, I never used to be. I'm not even going to lie. When my mom passed a few years back, and ever since then, it's just been difficult for me. Just not the same.
That's horrible.
You know, yeah.
But I still believe in Santa Claus and all that stuff. And
this made me think I'm going to get a lot of criticism for this probably because one of my favorite songs, it's by Hole.
Right.
And there's a lyric that says, I don't really miss God, but I sure miss Santa Claus.
Right. That's right. But I do. I mean, I still think there's Santa out there. I don't know. I wake up. I still think.
Yeah.
You can't hear.
No, I can't hear you.
Wow.
But that's okay. Hopefully everyone else can hear us.
No, they can. maybe we need to wiggle or something. I'm trying to figure it out, but
wiggle it
you
just a little
try?
Bit. No,
well, that's
all
okay.
Right. People that are listening don't want to hear us wiggling it.
All right, and we have to thank Becky Baker. Obviously, had to be friends with Becky Baker, but she actually posted this thing. I think it's the coolest thing. It's a woman like in a nighty. Well, what? No, like an evening gown, doing the weather in Detroit at 6 a.m. in the morning. And I already have a backstory to this because I just made it up. Because this is stuff that happens to everybody. Is that she was out all night, and she just got in just enough time to do her job, because there's no way you would have woke up in the morning and put a cocktail dress on.
So you're saying she's not living the sober life?
I don't think she's living the sober life. If you look at her, I don't know, in Detroit, the weather's always bad, so it doesn't really matter, but like you look at her, she's like, she's been out all night. There's no way you would do that. I mean, even if she was going to something in the morning, you wouldn't dress like that. Because I'm looking at her now. Her eyes are like closed. But thank you, Becky, because that's pretty interesting. I thought, yeah, wow. But that's what, so I created this whole story about this weather woman. So if you're listening, weather woman, I'm sorry that we busted you, but you were out all night, and that's the only, there's only one story that you wear a cocktail dress to do the weather.
Oh, that's pretty amazing.
We got a lot of stuff coming up. Next week, obviously, is Thanksgiving week, so we'll be running a, the best, not the best of.
We're going to play that by ear because I might go solo.
Wow, you're going to go solo.
Yeah, I have something in the works possibly. I'm going to talk to our friend Dave and see if we should do a show or not. But so stay tuned.
Yeah.
Pay attention. Follow us on Facebook.
Yeah, I will
our
not be
website.
There. I will be away. But, that'd be good. So Carrie can, she's already breaking out. See, I knew this was going to happen. We become partners. She's already doing a solo show.
And Joel in his old age is forgetting things because I talked to you about this.
No, I remember.
But I shouldn't be talking about anybody about their old age. I am sitting here right now. I can't even turn my head to the left because in the middle of the night I woke up and I went to go move like positions.
Right.
And I pulled something in my neck.
Because you're old.
And I can't.
I do that
even
in the
turn a certain way.
I do that in the shower. Like I'll go reach for the soap and it's like, and what is that? Because I'm running all the time and I bike all the time. But yeah.
But it's weird how that works. Like I'm a very active person and I don't hurt myself in the midst of these activities, but then I do something stupid like roll over the wrong way or you know, go to pick up a towel that dropped on the floor and I pull something.
Yeah, no, at your age, that's what's going on. So we got so then the week after we're gonna have Casa Trinity will be on with us. They are the sponsors, or no, I can't, not sponsors, what do we say,
underwriters.
They're underwriters of the Rock Out for Recovery, which is huge. And, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit. That is now at the Pillar.
Yes.
Which is on Mountain Hope Avenue. They are gracious enough to give us a spot. It's actually a bigger, it's going to hold more people, and it actually is more conducive to what we really want to do, right?
It is. We checked it out last week, and it's really cool. It's kind of like it was meant to be. You know, they say something's happened for a reason, and our change of venue may have just happened for a reason, because the people that operate this venue, it's substance free. They're just very big on positivity and creating a safe environment for all people. And for people that are going to be coming, people that are listening to the show that are in recovery, it's a nice safe venue for you.
Yeah, it's going to be better, because it will be, because I always felt, you know, we talked, this is a conversation that's been going back and forth with everybody on this project. And I think bringing a, you know, newly people in new recovery to a bar wasn't really the best.
Well, and that's the thing, too. I mean, the clubs in Rochester, the music venues, there's really not any music venues in Rochester that don't have a bar.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, so it's cool that we have discovered the Pillar, mm-hmm. because here we go. We have a music venue that doesn't have a bar.
And someday we're hoping that will start happening, right? That Rochester is like, because there's a place in Pennsylvania, right, that has like
Yeah, they're
sober,
working on it.
Sober
Kyle
clubs.
Kuhn, sober bars, yeah.
Yeah, and who knows? You know, if you have an entrepreneur out there listening, this is something that, because the sober movement's getting huge. So, I mean, it has, and the whole thing is, it should be more than just a coffee house. I think we get stuck. Everyone thinks, oh, if it's a sober nightclub or something, it'll just be a coffee
house.
Right,
isn't that just a coffee shop?
Right. And it's not. Other than we are having can we talk about them? Because they're going to be at our event, right?
Coffee Connection?
Yes, yeah. So they'll be there.
Yeah.
But we'll do more than coffee, right? We're going to have I can't drink coffee that late. I don't know.
It's going to depend on what they bring. Yeah. But at least we'll have something for people to drink besides alcohol.
Yeah, and that's that's also a really nice organization.
Mm-hmm.
It's been around for a really long time, and they support recovery and sober events. And
well, the majority, I think all of the women that work for them are in recovery themselves.
Yeah, so that's going to be pretty cool. What else is going on? You know what's interesting? I get a lot of families now calling me because they're kid or whatever has been busted with heroin, and they seem so amazed that is actually going, like, holy cow.
Still?
Yeah,
they're still, like, amazed.
They're still amazed.
There should be nobody out there at this point in time that is in any way surprised,
right,
or amazed that heroin is impacting their family.
I know, but it's so real. I recently got a call and was like, you know, they were on the freeway and all of a sudden they got pulled over, and you know what, Joel, they had 13 bags of heroin in the car. Really? Because that's like a Tuesday probably for that kid.
Yeah.
And it's like, now, and they don't understand it. Like, oh, how could this happen? It happens pretty easy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because they said, we knew he might have had a pill popping. I like, they always say that, a pill popping problem.
Right.
And now he's taking heroin. Well, it's because that's the bridge, mm-hmm. obviously. And it's, I don't know how much more we can bring this out to the public, but it's happening everywhere.
When you say that, too, and we had a previous guest on that said something similar. You know, it's okay. Oh, they've got a pill problem. It, you know, they're taking pills. They're using this and that. And then all of a sudden, when they make the jump to heroin, it's this big, huge,
right.
It should have been a problem that they were using pills.
Right, because I think people think back to the 70s of the old heroin user. That's what they're thinking. They're thinking of the guy back in the – they're thinking of the person back in the city, and they're, you know, strung out on heroin, and
right,
people, that's what people see, but it's not. It's every little Midwestern kids, or there's a woman,
it's everybody.
Yeah, it's not. It's the, because it's cheaper. It's cheaper.
And it's easier to access for people,
right,
that are listening that don't understand that. And they think, how could my kid, my brother, my husband, whatever, find heroin? It's easier to get.
Right.
It is easier to find.
And our
than
thing
pills.
Too, and we in our profession has to. I have a little story, and they can't hear us from where we're at anyway. But so this week I had a person do Narcan training with us, mm-hmm. right? And she was pretty excited. She was you could tell when there are new people on the field because they're just all bubbly and they,
right,
you know,
she's gonna come in and save the world.
She's gonna come in and save the world. And she did Narcan training, and she said, you know, how this is changing her life, and she's meeting all these people. And she said a few things. She said a couple things. She probably thought it was by accident, but it's the truth. She goes, we provide them Narcan training so we could save them to do this again. Now I want to say something to that, because that is so true. Because her second line was, when people overdose, you would think that would scare them. Let me tell you something. People, if you ever talk to people that have overdosed or people that are aware that someone overdosed, they're running to get the overdose heroin. They're running to get that
strong
drug
stuff.
They want that strong.
Because it's the good stuff.
That's
the fire. Yeah.
Right. So they're going to find out, man, where is that OD stuff at? And that sounds so sick, but that's what's going on. But she was just so funny because she was so out of touch with what's going on. Because obviously, you know, we're trying to get as many people trying to help out as possible. But yeah, it was like amazing to me but that was the line that got to me, and that it was so true. She probably didn't realize she said it, that
yeah,
we do Narcan to save someone to actually use for another day, because most kids that have OD'd have OD'd a couple times.
And it's hard to explain that to people that haven't had an addiction. It really is. And, you know, I will share some personal experience with this. You know, when I was 19 years old, one of my best friends overdosed, and he ended up being in a persistent vegetative state up until last year. He passed away last year. But, you know, I remember visiting him in a coma. He was in a coma, visiting him in a hospital. And I would go out to the parking lot and do the same thing that he had done that resulted in him being in a coma. And that's the insanity of addiction. And it's really hard to explain that to people, because people are saying, you know, you're visiting your friend that's in a coma because he overdosed, and then you're going out in the parking lot and doing the same thing. It's
That's
the insanity of an addict's brain. It does you are not thinking normally. Your brain is hijacked, and what matters is that substance.
Right. No, it's like the old pictures of the doctors in the 50s, you know, they were treating lung cancer with a cigarette out of their mouth. I mean, it was like the same thing.
Yeah.
It's insane. But it's really interesting, because, you know, that, you know, we're, you know, Narcan's a wonderful thing because it's saving lives.
Mm-hmm.
And but it shouldn't just be used to, it's almost like now we're not, you can't address it always with that. I mean, we are. It becomes, that's the saving part. But then after you save them, that's when some intervention has to happen.
Well, it's a Band-Aid, just like anything else. Yeah, you got to treat the root of it. You can't just slap a Band-Aid on it and you're fixed, you're cured. You need to take some Suboxone, you're fixed.
Right.
Here, you know, we revived you from your overdose. Stop using. It's not as simple as that, and that's the problem, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I remember it's turning into, there is more of a conspiracy theory to this. I remember watching Bob and the Monster, and Bob Forrest was talking about how he feels that Suboxone, all these things were a conspiracy, but now Narcan's in the view. So everything is developed by a pharmaceutical company. So far, the pharmaceutical companies are, even though they're trying to address we're addressing this issue with more pharmaceuticals. So Suboxone, we now have something now, clients or patients just stare at Suboxone as that's going to be the thing that's going to stay, keep them sober.
Right.
It doesn't change the behavior.
Right.
Right. It's
you
like,
still got to work on everything else that got you to the place that you were addicted to begin with.
Right. It's like it's like people that get the band on their stomach.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they just, after a year, they're back to being 300 pounds again.
Right.
Because it doesn't change the thing. So.
You know, it's not to say that they're not helpful.
It's a tool,
but you know, there is no magic pill. There is no magic cure. There's work that needs to be done. You know, and
I think we just forgot to live like people.
Mm-hmm.
We forgot to have pain. You know, we forgot to be human.
Well, and that's, look at what I'm going through right now. You know, I have a history of degenerative disc disease, and I am not a candidate for pain medication. I can't take pain medication for multiple reasons.
Right.
But, you know, I'm like living with some pain right now, and I'm a human. It's normal. Like, it would be nice to not have the pain. It would be nice to take a pill and say, have it completely go away. But that's just not realistic.
You could go find some acupuncturist.
Yeah. Even just stretch up and stretching it out. It feels better than it did earlier. You know, because I wasn't just so quick to
pop
some pain meds or something, you know, deal with a little bit of pain.
But we're in a society that does that. That's
I won't even go to the doctor. But that's, you know, I'll talk about that. I won't even go to my doctor. Because I have a new doctor. My old doctor I had since I was a teenager. So she knew me. She knew my history. She knew everything. You know, she was used to seeing me in all my full tattooed glory when I had my little gown on and whatever. But she retired, and there's a new doctor who I haven't met yet. And I'm nervous to see him. Like, I was even thinking when I had this pain, Tracy had said to me, maybe you should go to the doctor. Because you seem like you're in quite a bit of pain. And I'm thinking, I'm kind of nervous to go to the doctor, because what is he going to, is he going to think I'm like med seeking? Is he going to be like, look at this, you know, she's got a former opiate use diagnosis, dependence diagnosis, whatever.
Why'd she switch up?
Right. And I'm like, then I'm thinking, oh, is he going to like judge me? Look at this tattooed girl coming in here with neck pain.
Right.
She wants some medication. You know, it's
no, I'm going to say, can I tell you what? I'm the same way. I'm afraid. I've had this doctor. Well, can you say, you could say penis on the radio, right?
Of course.
So I have this doctor. Carrie's looking at me in shock.
I'm like of course you can say penis. Why can't you say penis?
Where is he going?
Penis.
Sunrise. So I had this doctor for 20, 20-some years. I'm looking at the engineer's pipe on his delay button. But no, and it's like, but he just got used to, like, this, my all my tattoos, can I have held him? And I'm sure he's a great doctor, but I'm afraid to go to anybody else because, like, I don't want the whole thing. But I remember my last physical, which is so funny, because he looked at me. He goes, Mr. Yeager, do you realize you got two blue spots on your penis? And they're tattoos. And he looked at me, and he's never swore in his life. And he just said, and I'm not even going to say what he said, but I'm afraid, too. I'm like, why would you, go...
I love that you just, because I've been wanting to say this for so long, and I would never disrespect you by saying it without your permission.
Right.
But you finally admitted to all of our listeners that you have a tattooed penis.
I do. But it was just so funny having this guy for so long, and finally he said, then that shows you that they're just, they look like smashed moss on a windshield by now, but... But it's just so fun. Yeah, so I'm the same thing. I'm afraid to go to a doctor because how would you explain that? Because he would just think you're some nutcase. Right. Like, are you kidding me? No, doc, I got him when I was 17. Right. I was overseas in a state of delusion.
And that's stigma. I mean, that word is thrown around a lot, but that's right. Like that's the fear that it creates, stuff from years ago, many moons ago. And you still have that fear of like, what is this professional going to think of me?
Yeah, because even this nurse practitioner is pretty cool because, they're like, she's used to it now. Now everybody wants to see me when I come in. I don't know why, but they all want to. It's like I'm getting a new nurse every week. So today we have this, the Sober Senorita. I just love that name.
Sober Senorita?
Senorita. Is that how you say it?
How do you say it? Because I don't know that you're the Sober Senorita.
Senorita.
Yeah,
right?
I'm just making myself sound like a fool.
Oh, but she's not from Mexico, right?
She moved down there at one point. That's part of her story. I'll let her tell you how she got that name.
Because really, I'm saying, because once,
She's
Trump...
actually from Pennsylvania, originally.
Well,
suburbs.
Once Trump puts up that wall, we won't be able to hear from you anymore.
No, she's from the suburbs of Pennsylvania originally.
Really?
And then she ended up moving to Cancun, and that's part of her story.
Is that where she's at now?
No, now she lives in Florida. Everybody... If you are known for sobriety, you probably live in Florida.
Right.
And I'm going to ask her about that. Is Florida
It's warm.
The rehab mecca right now?
It is. But during some of those treatment centers down there are in trouble.
Well, that one person was indicted recently.
Yeah, because they're not really doing anything. They're making these spas and, they'll throw a couple of nurses in there and a doctor and whoever, some relative, and they run these places and they're not getting anything out of it. So it's expensive. So, yeah. So we have her coming up. This is going to be... What's her real name? Does she want to give her real name?
Oh, yeah. No, her real name is Kelly Fitzgerald.
Right.
So...
And she's famous, sort of.
Well, yeah. In the sober community, she wrote a blog back in 2014, and it was about her first year of sobriety, and it blew up. Like, blew up, went viral, and she rose to fame in the sober community for this. And definitely one of the things I want to chat with her about because it's really interesting how that's happening nowadays with people. You kind of become, well known for your sobriety, which is cool, but it's just strange because that's never been normally in the past. The people that, rose to fame were the big hot messes. That was what was drawing people's attention. And now you have people that are becoming well known, local
big hot messes. Which is good. I'm telling you, everybody out there wants to open a sober bar. This is going to be a huge movement someday. So, so we'll be back in a little bit. We'll give her a call.
Yeah.
And hopefully she'll answer.
No, she'll answer. Just talk to her.
Okay. See you in a little bit. All right. We're back. Carrie's dancing in the studio.
Yep. For those that are listening, Sober Life Radio, and we have Kelly Fitzgerald, a.k.a. the Sober Senorita.
I just love that name. I just love it.
How's it going, Kelly?
Oh, thank you. I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
Glad to be here.
So for those that are listening that are not familiar with Kelly, the Sober Senorita, do you want to tell people a little bit about yourself, like how you came to be the Sober Senorita?
Yeah.
Sure. So I guess it all started with my sobriety, which goes back to 2013 and goes back even farther with my drinking career, which started, when I was in high school. Mm-hmm. I had always been someone that wanted to be part of the popular crowd. I wanted to be invited to all the parties. I really loved socializing, and I saw drugs and alcohol as a way to do that. So I started dabbling in that when I was in high school, and my drinking career really took off in college. I went to Millersville University, which is in central Pennsylvania. I'm from the suburbs of Philadelphia.
Wow.
And I just couldn't wait to go to college because I knew that I would be by myself and that I would be unsupervised and I could do whatever I wanted. And I knew there were parties there and I just couldn't wait. And, you know, I went to all the parties. I started binge drinking a lot, started blacking out. That became like a normal part of my drinking. And for me, I just thought it was fun. I thought it was normal. I thought everyone blacks out and, you know, I'm not the only one. So there's nothing wrong with what I'm doing.
Right. This is what college and girls do.
Right, exactly. And I was able to, you know, keep a tight schedule, attend mostly all my classes and get good grades. And, you know, I ended up graduating with 2 degrees, actually, one in communications, one in political affairs. And I also played 4 years of college soccer. So it was a very hectic time. But sometimes I look back, I'm like, I'm amazed I did all that and continued to drink like I was. But so that was kind of like set the precedent for me in my drinking career. And after college, I graduated in December of 2007. I went 4.5 years. And I just knew that I like didn't want to get a real job and I didn't want to do normal life. I wanted to continue partying and I just couldn't deal with like normal life. So I was thinking about what I could do after college. And in college, I had gone on spring break 2 years in a row, my junior and senior year, I believe. And one of the places I went to was Acapulco, Mexico. Mm-hmm. And while I was there, I saw like the company that we bought our trips through sends people from the U.S. to work there on site. And these people just work in these exotic locations and they take care of like the travelers, which are normally all college kids that come for spring break, and they make sure that their trips run smoothly and they take them to party. And it looked really fun. And I was like, wow. Like, is this a job?
Sign me up.
Yeah. So I had that in my head and I was like, it's perfect because I'm graduating in December. The spring break season is in March and it's like a 2 month period. So I applied to work for a few of these companies that I knew did that. So I got hired by one of those companies and they sent me to Cancun to work. And it was like paradise. Well, obviously it's paradise in general for anyone, even if they don't drink, but for someone that drinks and parties like I did, it was perfect because it was all about partying, continuous party all the time, tourists from everywhere. Also a lot of people that go there and live there are just, you know, trying to get away from something.
Right.
This is like a phenomenon I realized when I started living there full time. It's like a lot of people are running away from stuff. There was tons of people that were drinking and using like I was. So it was the perfect place for me at that time. And my addiction really took off there, even more so than in college. I mean, I continued to binge drink. I continued to black out. I experimented with other drugs like cocaine and ecstasy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I really loved living in Mexico. It was fun. It was crazy. And it supported my addiction. So
sure.
I ended up actually moving there full time because I, in 2008, 2009, I just went for like the spring break time period to work, which was like March and April.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up moving there, which is crazy. Everyone's like, I can't believe you went there by yourself.
But it shows how committed you were to
committed.
Like you call it your career of using and drinking.
Yeah.
Like, I'm moving there.
Right, exactly. And you know, it was so super far away from my family and my close friends. So like no one really like interrogated me. They didn't know like half of what I was doing. So it was like a perfect situation, the perfect storm, if you will,
right,
for everything. And you know, today I'm grateful for even going there. Some people ask me if I regret it and I don't, because it definitely changed the entire course of my life. And I learned a lot of stuff there. You know, I learned how to speak Spanish. I met like lifelong friends. I met my fiance there. So I continued to drink there and it was very out of control. I almost lost a few jobs. I ended up quitting one that I probably should have lost.
Right.
And, you know, it got to a point where I was like not sleeping before going to work
right.
some days, and it was just not healthy. So in 2013, that was the year that I decided to stop drinking. And it was because I had met my now fiance, Fernando, in 2012. And when we met, we had a very toxic relationship We met, we partied together every day. Mm-hmm. We always argued basically about drinking and drugging, and he wanted to tell me I was out of control, and I didn't want to hear that. And so I ended up, you know, trying really hard to kind of regulate my drinking that first year of knowing him, because I wanted to prove to him and myself that I had this thing under control, that I could drink normally and just have fun and just have one drink and not black out. And it was really hard. I couldn't do it, you know?
Right.
And I would get so frustrated. I would get frustrated that I couldn't do it. I would get frustrated that other people could just have two or three drinks and have fun. And I just couldn't seem to get it. So in 2013, I had planned a trip with my high school girlfriends, and we were going to Punta Cana for a girl's bachelorette party, one of my best friends. So I was going to fly from Cancun to Punta Cana and meet my friends who were coming from Philly. And, of course, Fernando was like, I don't want you to go on the trip.
Right.
Like, you're going to be out of control. You can't drink. Like, you're going to put yourself in a dangerous situation. I'm worried about you. And we fought about that, and I was like, well, I can't just cancel the trip. What am I going to tell them? And, you know, I had all these excuses. Like, he's like, well, you could just not drink. I'm like, that sounded crazy.
Right.
Yeah, like, that's out of the question. Like, yeah.
Right.
Bachelor party, no drinking.
To an all-inclusive resort. Right. And which is ironic because I just had one of those.
Right.
And I was like, okay, I'm going to go and don't worry. And I had like to convince him that I would be okay. And so I ended up going, and that was in May 2013. And the first 2 days I was there, I was able to keep myself under control, which to me meant drinking as much as I could without blacking out and still being coherent enough to like text him and be like, I'm alive. I'm fine.
Right.
Everything's great. I'm having fun. And like the third day there, I ended up blacking out because we were drinking all day, and or I was drinking all day. I'm pretty sure my friends weren't drinking as much as I was, but I thought they were at the time. And so I ended up actually blacking out, and my friends had to take care of me, and I ended up throwing up in the hotel room, and it was just embarrassing and not cool. And so I woke up like that next morning with a bunch of text messages from Fernando, and he said, you know, I'm done. I know exactly why you're not texting me. Like, right. And I'm done with this. I can't watch you do this to yourself. I'm not going to participate in this. And you said that you had it under control, and you obviously don't. So he basically broke up with me via text message while I'm on this trip. And of course I used that as an excuse for the last like 2 days that I was there to drink more.
Like, woe is me.
To cry.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, poor me. This isn't fair. This always happens to me. Why? And like trying to make my friends feel bad for me. And so then on the trip back, well, in the airport, I was getting ready to fly back to Cancun. And like at this time, Fernando and I were living together. I was like, oh, what are we going to do? Like, he's going to leave the apartment. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I was like, just really, well, hungover, number one, and just really, you know, a mess, and just sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I just remember sitting in that airport by myself and just crying my eyes out and calling my mom, like, I don't know what's wrong with me, Mom. Like, I can't figure this thing out. Like, I don't understand why I can't drink normally. Everyone else seems to be able to do it. Everyone else seems to have this thing down where they have this balance and they're having fun and they don't have all these consequences. They don't fight with their significant others. They don't black out and feel sick the next day and all of these things that always happened to me throughout the years of my drinking. And my mom was just like, you know, Cal, it's because you're an alcoholic. And I was like, oh, and it hit me like a ton of bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I think she's right. And I just at that moment, I had like my moment of clarity, and I just said, okay, I need to try something that I've never tried before, because I had been trying for months to try to figure this thing out, moderate, regulate. So I was like, okay, I'm just not going to drink or use drugs until further notice to figure out if I can do this or what I can do. So that was the last day. Well, that was the day after the last day I had my last drink. And that was May 7th, 2013. And that's my sobriety date today.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, that's usually not the story how it goes. I mean, normally there's you know, seven treatment episodes and a ton of meetings before you get to it. But.
Well, and were you always a writer? Because this is, I mean, you're very well known in the sober community because of your writing, because of your blog, and one in particular. that one where you wrote about your first year without alcohol. Had you always been a writer?
So I hadn't always been a writer. I had always been interested in writing. But I got this job actually like 2 months after I got sober. I got a new job in Cancun, and it was for a group of hotels, and it was writing blogs and doing social media. So just for like Cancun travel stuff, nothing about sobriety, obviously, mm-hmm. but I began writing for them, and a lot of my coworkers were like, your blogs are so great. Like, you should start your own blog. And they like encouraged me. And I knew a few other people that I was friends with in Cancun who were expats living in Cancun from some other country. And they had blogs about that with that premise. So that's how I first started my blog. I was like, okay, American girl living in Cancun, like that will be like the premise of my blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I, when I was trying to think of a name for it, I was like, okay, I want to incorporate being sober into it somehow, because I feel like this is part of my new identity, even though I hadn't really spoken out much about it. But I was like, I'm gonna like incorporate it into the blog somehow. And actually my sister came up with the name Sober Senorita. She's like, it's perfect, like, you're sober, you're a senorita, you're living in Cancun.
Right.
I was like, all right. And so the first few months of that blog, all I wrote about was like living in Cancun,
yeah.
and like how it's different like living in Mexico. And I was like kind of too scared to write about being sober. I was like, I don't know how I'm going to like mention this. And I kind of just like casually mentioned that I went to like a wine and food festival in the Riviera Maya, and they had mocktails there, and that I appreciated that. And I mentioned that. And then it wasn't until my 1 year anniversary in 2014, where I wrote that post that you were just talking about, 1 year without alcohol, because I was like amazed, number one, that I made it to 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wow, I'm really proud of myself. I'm like, this has been like a really emotional year, and I want to write about it. So I just wrote about it on my blog, and it ended up going viral, which is like insane to me still to this day.
Wow,
yeah.
That's amazing.
And that's kind of how, yeah, that's, and ever since then I've wrote mostly about sobriety and almost only sobriety. And plus I moved away from Cancun. So I didn't have the premise of living in an American girl living in Cancun anymore, but yeah, that post went viral. And I mean, it's been translated into like 5 different languages. The Huffington Post picked it up. I've been interviewed about it countless times. It's like crazy. And I never knew that when I wrote it. I was just like proud of myself. And I just wanted to get like my feelings out,
right.
how I changed in that first year. And I was like, yeah. And I was so scared like publishing it, because I was like, I don't know what people are going to say. Or like, I just figured like my close friends and family would read it, because I shared it on my my personal Facebook page. I didn't even have a Facebook page for Sober Senorita at that time. The only reason I made a Facebook page for Sober Senorita is because it started going viral, and I was like, oh, I should probably make a Facebook page for my
right.
blog at that time. So, and it, wow, yeah, I could never imagine it went as far as it did.
It's like crazy. It's cool,
right.
but it's weird that like somebody can, that people are now, we're in a place where people become so well known for their sobriety, like almost like famous
yeah.
for being sober,
right? So when
yeah,
did the
it's crazy.
How did the boyfriend, did he come back in the picture? I mean, I was you're getting married to
yeah,
him.
Yeah, I left that part out.
Right.
Yeah. So when I went,
because I wonder what happened with him.
When I sorry, yeah. So when I flew back to Cancun after I had that conversation with my mom, he actually agreed to pick me up at the airport, and we talked. And he had actually moved his stuff out of our apartment, and he was gone for a week. He went back with his parents for like a week. And so my first week of sobriety, I was in the house by myself. But he then was like, okay, I'm ready to like try again. And I think you might be really serious about this not drinking thing. And I was like, yeah, I am. So yeah, we ended up getting back together. He moved back in, and we've been together ever since. And last year, almost a year ago, he proposed to me, and we're going to be getting married on February 11th, 2017.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, I'm really excited.
We referenced it briefly, but you recently had a bachelorette party.
Yeah, you got to talk
about
it.
Sober bachelorette
yeah.
party. How was that for you? Because I was just talking to somebody last night that's trying, she's contemplating becoming sober, and that was one of her things, and I think we've all experienced that, like, what do I do like for a bachelorette party, what do I do when I get married, how can I not
yeah.
drink?
Right,
exactly. Well, I think that's something every person thinks about when they're getting sober, like, how do we do these life events, like
yep.
weddings, birthdays, whatever, Christmases, bachelorette. I was sober at my bachelorette, and I invited some of my best friends. Some are sober, some are not.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of a mix of people. I mean, whoever stuck around with me through all of this. And, but I, you know, decided to pick a place where I knew wasn't a crazy party place.
Right.
So we ended up going to Marco Island, Florida, which is just like an hour south of where I live on the southwest coast of Florida. And it has beautiful beaches, which is my thing. I'm a beach girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the demographic is mostly older people. So
right.
I knew that it wouldn't be like, I know it's not like Cancun where there's a party strip and there's nightclubs right. and the nightclubs stay open until 5 a.m. or anything like that. So I kind of like picked it because of that. And my friends, obviously, they're my best friends and they know that it wasn't going to be something where we'd all be drinking. However, like we went out to dinner and there were a few girls ordered glasses of yeah. wine. And for me, I just got my sparkling water and, you know, mm-hmm. they honored my wishes and my choices, did whatever I wanted to do. So basically we went to the beach every day for 3 days. We went out to like fancy restaurants and had really good food. And on Saturday we went on a cruise around Marco Island, like on a boat
okay.
that had lunch. And we sat out on the deck and that was really cool being on a boat with all of them. So that's what we did for my sober bachelorette, and it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's nice. So, yeah, I was wondering because
yeah.
the things change. I mean, it's not, yeah. it becomes more like a normal, whatever
right,
normal
exactly.
is. I mean, it,
right. Well, like I was explaining to this girl last night, you for me anyways, you eventually get to a point where, you know, at one point you can't imagine your life without alcohol or drugs, and then you get to a point where you really can't imagine it with those substances.
Well, right. Can I, and that's also
exactly.
true. Yeah, you're not going to have the penis cupcakes if you're not drinking. Like that
Who
kind
says?
Of, well, I'm just saying. So
well,
like all that stuff, you know, that this crazy stuff that we do is normally alcohol ends up being
right.
part of it. So, you know, it's, I think it's just funny because then you won't be doing the things. Because when drunk girls are having a bachelorette party, they don't even want to see those pictures after. And there's a reason because you,
right.
you shouldn't be doing that stuff. Right? I mean,
yeah.
you can, but.
I mean, I did have a penis wand. I'm not going to lie.
Okay.
and a few other, like, penis decorations. But
all right.
it wasn't like, you know, how crazy it would normally be where you're, like, eating penis cookies and all this stuff. But
right.
It was, like, a little bit more low-key. But I did have a sash that said Future Mrs. Junco, which is going to be my last name.
Mm-hmm.
And I wore a white dress, and my girls wore black. So all that, like, classic stuff. I mean, you can still pretty much do everything.
Yeah.
Just,
okay.
You just don't drink.
Yeah.
And that's, like what you said, Carrie, that's what it is for me today. Like, I just am a sober person. That's my identity now. So
right.
I don't feel, like, nervous about it because it's just, like, how it is.
Right. It is
yeah,
who you are.
We talk about that all the time because you've never met Carrie and I, but we just look completely whacked out. I mean, we're just – if you saw us on the street, you would just walk away from us. So, so I think –
I don't know. You definitely.
Wow.
So it's like – So really, because and that's what we talk about is being your authentic self. You could be your authentic self sober. In fact, that's when you really become your authentic self. And I think that's so important because then you have purpose in life and, you know, you really appreciate love with your, you know, your significant other now. That'll be real love and not just some kind of, you know, love from a bottle.
Oh, yes. Uh-oh. Yes, exactly. And I think that's one of the best things about sobriety is you really get to learn about yourself. You finally get to become who you were always meant to be. And your relationships are authentic and real.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what makes our life perfect.
I'm pretty sure if
right.
Kelly and I knew each other in real life, so to speak, we'd be friends. We have a similar
yeah.
love for soccer. We've talked about that.
Yes, Carrie.
Oh,
yes. Carrie played soccer in prison. Right? No, I was like,
oh my gosh. No, I played, I used to play soccer. I actually played internationally when I was a teenager. I got a chance to
That's
go over
awesome.
To Italy. Yeah, I got to play in Italy on a co-ed team, which was amazing because over in Italy, there are no co-ed teams. So it was our United States
right.
co-ed team playing against all these Italian boys and Swedish boys. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And you're a big
that
fan
is
of
awesome.
Our local soccer star, Abby Wambach.
Oh, you are?
Yes.
Yeah,
I love
fine.
Her. Yeah, she's
finally...
And now that she's sober.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, she is.
Yes. Yes, I just finished her memoir. Yeah, and I love soccer. I actually played in Cancun, too. And it's just... Soccer has been, like, a constant in my life, whether I'm drinking or not. And, like, it's just, like, one of those things that you can depend on. And that's always there for me. It has been since I was, like, a kid.
That's awesome.
It is great. So what's going on with you now? What are you doing? And what are you about to do? We'll give you some...
So now, I mean... I'm still
like
writing,
the,
and
You can plug yourself what any way you want.
Yeah, you got an event coming up, right?
Oh, yes. Yes. So besides the wedding planning is taking over my life right now.
Oh,
so
bet.
I'm really excited for that, but I also can't wait for it to be over. And then so next year in 2017, in May, I am on the official sober blogger panel for the She Recovers New York City event.
Okay.
So it's a 3-day conference, and it's for women in recovery from anything. And that we have going to have great speakers like Marianne Williamson, Glennon Doyle Melton, excuse me, and very other speakers like Elizabeth Vargas, and some other well-known sober bloggers are going to be there as well. So I really hope anyone that wants to can join me there. And you can get more information on the She Recovers website, which is SheRecovers.co.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, maybe Carrie can take the weekend off and head on out.
Yeah, you should.
I'd love to get there sometime. I really would.
There's going
to
be yoga and speakers and mocktails. It's going to be great.
Awesome. You know, while we have you on the phone, there's one question. I was actually talking to a friend of mine about this the other day. Now, obviously, like, I do the Sober Life Radio thing, and a friend of mine does a program called Recovery Fitness. And we were talking about how sometimes when you are, like, I don't want to say the face of sobriety, but when you're well known for your sobriety, it can put you in a weird position sometimes because you're almost like on this pedestal. Do you feel that that's like hard for people sometimes? Like, you know, if you slip or if you have a relapse or if you feel like an urge to use, what are your thoughts on that subject? Like people being placed on these sobriety pedestals?
So I think it's a weird phenomenon that we're dealing with here that we probably have never dealt with before. So in that way, everything is kind of new. But yeah, I mean, I can't speak for other people that are on the sobriety pedestals, mm-hmm. but for me, like what I've tried to do, especially since my writing has gone viral and been all over the internet and I've written for many sites, is I always try to like stay true to myself. And I really share, especially on my personal blog, anything that's happening in my life, good or bad. I don't want to like make it to be like sobriety is just sunshine and rainbows all the time because it's not. You also deal with a lot of hard stuff. And you're sad sometimes, and sometimes you think about drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, I haven't had a relapse yet, and, you know, I can't predict the future, but if that were to ever happen, and people have asked me, what would you do? Like, would you just shut down the blog? Or said, no, like, I would write about it, and I would try, and I would share with people what happened and how I can recover from that. I recently shared that I had a really tough time with this election that just happened. And I won't go into detail about it, but you know, it really affected me personally. And I thought about drinking and I shared that with my community, and they reached out and were very receptive. And he said, you know, me too. And thank you for saying that. So.
No, that's great because I think that's what people do with, like, we talked to Brandon Novak, who had put out a book shortly after his book, he relapsed and he didn't know what to do. I mean, it was
Well, I think, I think we need more of that too, because there's such like shame around that whole topic, you know, whether you're, you know, a blogger, you're a drug and alcohol counselor, you're a celebrity that's known for being in recovery, or you're sober, whatever. So I appreciate that, you know, that is something that you would talk about, God forbid that ever happened, but that's what we need more of, just people keeping it real. And it sounds like that's what you do. You keep it real.
Do you miss Philly?
Yeah. I miss Philly.
I love that's like my favorite city in the whole wide world. I just love Philadelphia. I mean,
I love it there. I was going to say I don't miss the weather in the winter, I'm just like a tropical person now because I lived in Cancun for so long and now I live in Florida. But yeah, I definitely miss it. And I'm actually going up there in December for one of my best friends from high school's wedding. She's getting married on New Year's Eve.
Oh,
so
wow.
We are going to be in Philly, Fernando and I, and we have tickets to the Eagles game on New Year's Day.
Wow. So. Yeah, I just love it. I used to be a big South Street whore because I have a lot of friends. Because I used to be in the tattoo business for years, and I have a lot of friends who still tattoo up on South Street.
Yeah.
So it's just...
it's a great place.
I love that area. And it's just, just something about that city that just keeps on drawing me back. But
my goal is to get down to Florida.
Yeah, it's a great city.
So that's a coordinate there.
Yeah,
I definitely want to get down to Florida. I want to meet you in person, hang out, have some sober fun.
Yes.
Good deal.
Yes, I would love that.
Well, thank you so much for being a guest on our show. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It was awesome. I really appreciate it.
If you ever get up to Rochester, look us up.
Yeah, I definitely will.
No one wants to come to Rochester. No, I'm just kidding. I take that back. We have a really
great
city.
Not really on my list.
No, but if it ever
if I'm ever nearby, I'll let you know.
You never know.
All right, Kelly. Have a good rest of your weekend, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. You too. Thanks, guys.
Yep, bye. Bye-bye.
Well, that was great.
Yeah, I like her. Yeah. She's a cool chick.
Yeah, it's just so funny because, I mean, that's, it is amazing because I think she really seemed very, like, authentic and like a real person.
Yeah, she does sound like that. And that's what I've gathered from her writings and whatnot and from what I know about her on social media. So it's cool when you actually talk to a person and, you know, they sound the same.
Now, remember, December 10th, we're going to keep unplugging this.
Yes.
Rock Out for Recovery.
Rock Out for Recovery. It's kind of a cheesy name, but it totally makes sense
because we
got The Rock coming out to support recovery.
Yeah, we have a really great lineup. Please, please, please show up. We need you to show up.
Yeah, and this you do not have to be in recovery. This is for people that are in recovery. This is for people that support the recovery movement. There is no way that you don't know somebody that has been impacted by addiction or that is in recovery. So come on out, support it. Check out some live music. Again, we've got Meg Gaiman. We have Jason Ferguson. We have Cincinnati Kid. We have Gremlins and Gridlock. We have Blindside Justice and our headliner Twitch.
So really, and if you want to look those guys up, any of them, I'm sure they have something. YouTube, you can YouTube any of those people.
Yep.
And Twitch is a big name in the recovery community, but he's a big name now in the music business. So thank you so much. You guys have Carrie might be here next week. We're looking at.
Yep. Stay tuned. I'll keep it posted. It'll be on the Facebook website.
Everybody have a great Thanksgiving, and we'll see you later.
Yep.
Love you, Carrie.
Love you too, Joel.
Bye-bye.